that he may never have had before. Only through the unconscious can such a view, which often shocks and upsets the conscious mind, be obtained, just as in Greek myth, the Gorgon Medusa, whose look turned men to stone, could be gazed upon only in a mirror. Below, Medusa reflected in a shield, a painting by the 17th century artist Caravaggio. Often the self is represented as a helpful animal, a symbol of the psyche's instinctual basis. Top left, the magic fox of Grimm's fairy tale, the golden bird. Center, the Hindu monkey god Hanuman carrying two gods in his heart. Bottom, Rin Tin Tin, the heroic dog once popular in American films and television. Stones are frequent images of the self because they are complete, that is, unchanging and lasting. Many people today look for stones of special beauty, perhaps on beaches, top right. Some Hindus pass from father to son stones, center, believed to have magical powers. Precious stones, like the jewels of Queen Elizabeth I, 1558 to 1603, bottom, are an outward sign of wealth and position. The eternal quality of stones can be seen in pebbles or mountains. Left, rocks beneath Mount Williamson, California. Thus, stone has always been used for memorials, like the heads of four U.S. presidents, above, carved in the cliff face of Mount Rushmore, South Dakota. Stones were also often used to mark places of worship, as was the sacred stone in the Temple of Jerusalem, far right. It was the center of the city, and as the medieval map, right, shows, the city was seen as the center of the world. Left, the black stone of Mecca, blessed by Muhammad, in an Arabic manuscript illustration, to integrate it into the Islamic religion. It is carried by four tribal chieftains, at the four corners of a carpet, into the Kaaba, the holy sanctuary to which thousands of Muslims make an annual pilgrimage, below left. Right, another symbolic stone, the Stone of Scone, or Stone of Destiny, on which Scottish kings were formerly crowned. It was taken to England's Westminster Abbey in the 13th century, but it never lost its importance for Scotland. On Christmas Day, 1950, a group of Scottish nationalists stole the stone from the abbey and took it back to Scotland. It was returned to the abbey in April, 1951. Right. A tourist kisses the famous Blarney Stone of Irish legend. It is supposed to confer the gift of eloquence on those who kiss it. A painting by the modern artist Hans Hoffenrichter resembles the pattern of a crystal, like ordinary stone, a symbol of wholeness. The feelings of boredom and apathy from which city dwellers today often suffer is only temporarily offset by such artificial excitements as adventure films, far left, and time-killing amusements, left. Jung stressed that the only real adventure remaining for each individual is the exploration of his own unconscious. The ultimate goal of such a search is the forming of a harmonious and balanced relationship with the self. The circular mandala images this perfect balance, embodied in the structure of the modern cathedral, right, of the city of Brasilia. Top, a Navajo makes a sand painting, a mandala, in a healing ritual. The patient sits in the painting. Above, a plan of a sand painting. It must be circled by a patient before entering. Left, a winter landscape by the German artist Caspar Friedrich. Landscape paintings usually express indefinable moods, as do symbolic landscapes in dreams. In the paintings, left, of the dream quoted earlier in this chapter, painted by the dreamer, the mandala motif appears as a quadrangle rather than a circle. Usually, quadrangular forms symbolize conscious realization of inner wholeness. The wholeness itself is most often represented in circular forms, such as the round table that also appears in the dream. Right, the legendary round table of King Arthur, from a 15th century manuscript, at which the Holy Grail appeared in a vision and started the knights on the famous quest. The Grail itself symbolizes the inner wholeness for which men have always been searching. Far left, The torrential waters of the river Heraclitus overwhelm a Greek temple in a painting by the modern French artist André Masson. The painting can be seen as an allegory of the results of imbalance, Greek overemphasis on logic and reason, the temple, leading to a destructive eruption of instinctual forces. Left, a more direct allegory, from a 15th century illustration to the French allegorical poem Le Roman de la Rose. The figure of logic, on the right, is thrown into confusion when confronted by nature. Right, the repentant St. Mary Magdalene gazes into a mirror in a painting by the 17th century French artist Georges de la Tour. Here, as in the tale of the Bath Bodgud, the mirror symbolizes the much-needed faculty of true, inward-looking reflection. The achievement of psychological maturity is an individual task, and so is increasingly difficult today when man's individuality is threatened by widespread conformity. Far left, a British housing development with its stereotyped dwellings. Left, a Swiss athletics display provides an image of mass regimentation. Above, a page from William Blake's Songs of Innocence and Experience, in which the poems reveal Blake's concept of the divine child, a well-known symbol of the self. Right, a 16th century painting of St. Christopher carrying Christ as a divine child, who is encircled by a world sphere, a mandala and a symbol of the self. This burden symbolizes the weight of the task of individuation, just as St. Christopher's role as the patron of travelers, far right, a St. Christopher medallion on a car's ignition key, reflects his link with man's need to travel the path to psychological wholeness. The conscious realization of the self can create a bond among people that ignores more obvious natural groups like the family, above left. A mental kinship on a conscious level can often be the nucleus of cultural development. Above, the 18th century French encyclopedists, including Voltaire, with raised hand. Below, a painting by Max Ernst of the early 20th century Dadaist artists and research physicists at Britain's Wills Laboratory. The psychological balance and unity that man needs today have been symbolized in many modern dreams by the union of the French girl and the Japanese man in the widely popular French film Hiroshima Mon Amour, 1959, above. And in the same dreams, the opposite extreme from wholeness, that is, complete psychological dissociation or madness, has been symbolized by a related 20th century image, a nuclear explosion, right. As in the dream quoted earlier in this chapter, positive anima figures often assist and guide men. Top of page, from a 10th century Psalter, David inspired by the muse. Above, a goddess saves a shipwrecked sailor in a 16th century painting. Right, on an early 20th century postcard from Monte Carlo, gambler's Lady Luck, also a helpful anima. Right, Liberty leading the French revolutionaries in a painting by Delacroix images the anima's function of assisting individuation by liberating unconscious contents. Far right, in a scene from the 1925 fantasy film Metropolis, a woman urges robot-like workers to find spiritual liberation. This 15th century statue of Mary contains within it images of both God and Christ, a clear expression of the fact that the Virgin Mary can be said to be a representation of the Great Mother archetype. A miniature from the 15th century French Book of Hours, showing Mary with the Holy Trinity. The Catholic Church's dogma of the Assumption of the Virgin, in which Mary, as Domina Rerum, Queen of Nature, was declared to have entered heaven with soul and body reunited, can be said to have made the Trinity fourfold, corresponding with the basic archetype of completeness. Paintings of the dreams discussed earlier in this chapter. Left, the spiral, a form of mandala, represents the Holy Ghost. Right, the dark wing of Satan from the second dream. Neither motif would be a familiar religious symbol to most people, nor were they to the dreamer. Each emerged spontaneously from the unconscious. This painting by Erhard Jacobi illustrates the fact that each of us, perceiving the world through an individual psyche, perceives it in a slightly different way from others. The man, woman, and child are looking at the same scene, but for each, different details become clear or obscured. Only by means of our conscious perception does the world exist outside. We are surrounded by something completely unknown and unknowable, here represented by the painting's gray background. End of photo captions. Part 4. Symbolism in the Visual Arts by Aniela Jaffe. Sacred Symbols. The Stone and the Animal. The history of symbolism shows that everything can assume symbolic significance. Natural objects, like stones, plants, animals, men, mountains and valleys, sun and moon, wind, water and fire. Or man-made things, like houses, boats or cars, or even abstract forms, like numbers or the triangle, the square and the circle. In fact, the whole cosmos is a potential symbol. Man, with his symbol-making propensity, unconsciously transforms objects or forms into symbols, thereby endowing them with great psychological importance, and expresses them in both his religion and his visual art. The intertwined history of religion and art, reaching back to prehistoric times, is the record that our ancestors have left of the symbols that were meaningful and moving to them. Even today, as modern painting and sculpture show, the interplay of religion and art is still alive. For the first part of my discussion of symbolism in the visual arts, I intend to examine some of the specific motifs that have been universally sacred or mysterious to man. Then, for the remainder of the chapter, I wish to discuss the phenomenon of 20th century art, not in terms of its use of symbols, but in terms of its significance as a symbol itself, a symbolic expression of the psychological condition of the modern world. In the following pages, I have chosen three recurring motifs with which to illustrate the presence and nature of symbolism in the art of many different periods. These are the symbols of the stone, the animal, and the circle, each of which has had enduring psychological significance from the earliest expressions of human consciousness to the most sophisticated forms of 20th century art. We know that even unhewn stones had a highly symbolic meaning for ancient and primitive societies. Rough, natural stones were often believed to be the dwelling places of spirits or gods, and were used in primitive cultures as tombstones, boundary stones, or objects of religious veneration. Their use may be regarded as a primeval form of sculpture, a first attempt to invest the stone with more expressive power than chance and nature could give it. The Old Testament story of Jacob's dream is a typical example of how, thousands of years ago, man felt that a living God or a divine spirit was embodied in the stone, and how the stone became a symbol. And Jacob went toward Haran, and he lighted upon a certain place, and tarried there all night, because the sun was set. And he took of the stones of the place, and put them for his pillows, and lay down in that place to sleep. And he dreamed, and behold, a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven. And behold, the angels of God ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it, and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham thy father, and the God of Isaac. The land whereon thou liest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed. And Jacob awaked out of his sleep, and he said, Surely the Lord is in this place, and I knew it not. And he was afraid, and said, How dreadful is this place! This is none other but the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. And Jacob rose up early in the morning, and took the stone that he had put for his pillows, and set it up for a pillar, and poured oil upon the top of it, and he called the name of that place Bethel. For Jacob, the stone was an integral part of the revelation. It was the mediator between himself and God. In many primitive stone sanctuaries, the deity is represented not by a single stone, but by a great many unhewn stones arranged in distinct patterns. The geometrical stone alignments in Brittany and the stone circle at Stonehenge are famous examples. Arrangements of rough natural stones also play a considerable part in the highly civilized rock gardens of Zen Buddhism. Their arrangement is not geometrical, but seems to have come about by pure chance. In fact, however, it is the expression of a most refined spirituality. Very early in history, men began trying to express what they felt to be the soul or spirit of a rock by working it into a recognizable form. In many cases, the form was a more or less definite approximation to the human figure, for instance, the ancient menhirs with their crude outlines of faces, or the herms that developed out of boundary stones in ancient Greece, or the many primitive stone idols with human features. The animation of the stone must be explained as the projection of a more or less distinct content of the unconscious into the stone. The primitive tendency to give merely a hint of a human figure and to retain much of the stone's natural form can also be seen in modern sculpture. Many examples show the artist's concern with the self-expression of the stone. To use the language of myth, the stone is allowed to speak for itself. This can be seen, for instance, in the work of the Swiss sculptor Hans Eschenbacher, the American sculptor James Rosati, and the German-born artist Max Ernst. In a letter from Maloja in 1935, Ernst wrote, "Alberto, the Swiss artist Giacometti, and I are afflicted with sculpturitis. We work on granite boulders, large and small, from the moraine of the Forno Glacier. Wonderfully polished by time, frost, and weather, they are in themselves fantastically beautiful. No human hand can do that. So why not leave the spade work to the elements and confine ourselves to scratching on them the runes of our own mystery?" What Ernst meant by mystery is not explained. But later in this chapter, I shall try to show that the mysteries of the modern artist are not very different from those of the old masters who knew the spirit of the stone. The emphasis on this spirit in much sculpture is one indication of the shifting, indefinable borderline between religion and art. Sometimes one cannot be separated from the other. The same ambivalence can also be seen in another symbolic motif, as it appears in age-old works of art, the symbol of the animal. Animal pictures go back to the last ice age, between 60,000 and 10,000 BC. They were discovered on the walls of caves in France and Spain at the end of the last century, but it was not until early in the present century that archaeologists began to realize their extreme importance and to inquire into their meaning. These inquiries revealed an infinitely remote prehistoric culture whose existence had never even been suspected. Even today, a strange music seems to haunt the caves that contain the rock engravings and paintings. According to the German art historian Herbert Kuhn, inhabitants of the areas in Africa, Spain, France, and Scandinavia where such paintings are found could not be induced to go near the caves. A kind of religious awe, or perhaps a fear of spirits hovering among the rocks and the paintings, held them back. Passing nomads still lay their votive offerings before the old rock paintings in North Africa. In the 15th century, Pope Calixtus II prohibited religious ceremonies in the cave with the horse pictures. Which cave, the